My father worked as a gardener for 35 years. He wasn't just a gardener for Costa Rica. He also went to universities, shopping malls, and housing developments. He did all of that when he was working for a company that provided contracted services. Later, on his own, he had clients in large houses, the kind that still have a garden in front, or people who hired him just to prune a tree they had on the sidewalk in front of their house. I'm telling you this because it has a lot to do with what happened later. A year before he retired, something happened to him on the street. It was almost 2 in the morning and he couldn't sleep. It was during those months of unbearable heat when the air in the bedroom doesn't move and you feel like you're sweating, even when you're lying down without covering yourself. He got up to get a drink of water and realized that the water jug was empty. Not a drop. He checked it carefully. He even shook the water jug to see if there was a trickle left at the bottom, but no, he had no choice but to go out into the street to buy at least one bottle. At that time, none of the stores were open. The only safe place was the OXXO, although it was far away, almost 12 blocks. That must have been how thirsty he was. He went in sandals, an old t-shirt, and his wallet in his pants pocket. He didn't have a cell phone. He walked calmly at first, except for the sound of mosquitoes buzzing near his ears and a dog barking in the distance. Everything felt hot, even the pavement beneath his feet. Halfway there, when he reached an intersection where there were no houses, he came across a police cordon. It was a corner with an abandoned restaurant, one of those that closed during the pandemic and never reopened. On the other side, there was a tire shop surrounded by chains. There was no yellow tape, but there were two police cars parked across the street with their turrets turned off. Only two police officers were there. One was leaning against the patrol car with his arms crossed. The second was pacing back and forth as if he were waiting for something. My dad asked them what was happening, if he could come in. One of them simply told him no, that the street was closed and that he should find another route. They didn't give him any more explanation. While he was talking to them, he managed to see beyond the patrol cars a car parked across the street and a motorcycle lying on its side with its lights on and the engine still quietly rumbling, as if it had just fallen over. There were two bodies on the ground, one next to the motorcycle and the other further ahead, near the car. They weren't moving. There was no visible blood from where he was, but from the way they were lying, he imagined they were in serious condition. An ambulance could be heard in the distance. Since there were no houses there, no neighbors watching, and no one recording, everything was empty. The restaurant was dark inside, with all the windows painted black. The tire shop had one of those red surveillance lights, but it blinked slowly, not illuminating much. He couldn't hear anything. No traffic, no voices, no police radios, nothing. My dad went back along the same sidewalk and turned at the first left. A block ahead, he turned left again. The street parallel to the one he was traveling on was even lonelier. There were tall trees that covered almost the entire sidewalk and several trucks parked along it. Although there were street lights on, the light didn't reach very well because the trees and trucks blocked them, leaving almost the entire street in darkness. When he was halfway down the block, he stopped. To one side, right against one of the trees, there was an aluminum ladder leaning against the trunk. It was a ladder exactly like the one he used at work. My dad stared at the ladder. He knew about these things and understood that it was an expensive work tool. He knew its value. It wasn't one of those made of sheet metal that bends over time. This one was made of thick aluminum, the kind used by those who are serious about pruning tall trees. He wondered if it wouldn't be better to put it away and then see how to find the owner. He thought some careless worker had forgotten it. The tree was very large. It had a closed, leafy crown with branches that tangled together. My dad knew that when you maintain them, you have to cut from the inside, from the center, going straight up. That's why it surprised him even more that someone would leave a ladder like that unattended. He went over and grabbed the ladder with both hands to move it a little and see if it wasn't loose or if he was going to take it with him. Then a voice from above told him not to move it. "Don't move it, boss. I'm still working up here." My dad got scared, took a step back, and stared at the branches trying to see the person. He couldn't see anything. Just dark leaves moving a little in the air. "Sorry, it worried me to see you here alone. I thought someone had forgotten you." "No, here I am," the voice replied. "Give me your hand, since you're there." My dad said yes. He always says yes. He's always willing to help even strangers. "Just hold on tight, so you don't let it move." My dad grabbed the ladder with both hands. He looked at the clock. It was 2:20 in the morning. He thought again that it was very strange that someone was pruning a tree at that time, not only because it was uncomfortable to work at night, but because you need a saw and those things make noise, a lot of noise. Besides, this was a residential area. If the saw motor could be heard even a little, someone would come out to shout or record from the window. But there was no sound. There were no falling leaves or cut branches, just the distant hum of the city and the sound of nocturnal insects. Then the guy up there spoke to him again. He saw the accident. My dad looked up, searched through the branches again, but he couldn't see anything, just a black hole between the leaves. "Yeah, well, I walked by there, I saw the bodies." The man at the bottom of the ladder said that the guy in the car was drunk. He was on the bike. The guy on the motorcycle was coming back from work. He was still wearing his backpack when the car hit him. First it was the motorcycle, then the concrete planter, the one on the corner, the one with the dried rose bush. He saw it. "That's where the car bounced," the guy said. My dad stood still. He didn't understand how he knew all that. He had barely seen the bodies from a distance. And the planter like that. Now that he thought about it, it was destroyed, but he hadn't noticed it at the time. The ambulance isn't coming. They've already notified the cops. They're going to wait for the forensics team and some backup to bring big lights. The thing is, they can't find the head. My dad swallowed. The head, the driver's head, is missing. It flew off to who knows where. That's what's missing. That's why they've closed the street, because they can't find it. My dad let go of the ladder for a second and looked toward the tree. He started to back up. It wasn't fear yet. It was that feeling that something didn't fit, but he didn't know exactly what. Why did he let go of the ladder? The man asked from above in a serious voice. My dad didn't answer. Okay, okay. I might catch something I'm going to throw at him. My dad took another step back without saying anything. He didn't want anything to do with it anymore. Something in that voice that at first sounded normal, now felt strange, as if it came from somewhere more closed off, more hollow. Do you know why they can't find it? The man asked in an almost mocking tone. The head, why can't they find it? Because it's here with us. And at that moment something fell from above. My dad caught sight of the silhouette in the air. It was spinning, and he pulled back just as the heavy mass fell to the pavement a few steps away from where he was. Sure enough, it was a head. Its mouth was half open as if it were still trying to scream. It had several days' worth of beard, short, dirty hair, stained with dried blood, its neck seemed torn, and its eyes, the eyes were still staring as if it could still recognize who was in front of it. My dad froze, and he stepped back in horror, not only because of what he had just seen, but because of what happened right after. Why didn't you catch her? The man said from above. Now take her to the police, she'll be all messed up. My dad felt a lump in his throat. He was pale, unmoving. What he had seen seconds before was a human head. He knew it, he had felt it in his stomach. But when he looked back at the pavement, there was no head there, it was a coconut, a freaking coconut split in half. One half had rolled away and the other was left with the hole facing up as if it were laughing. My dad swears to this day that what he saw falling was a head and a face. A face with eyes, with an expression. That's when the ladder began to wobble, not much, not as if someone had lost their balance, more as if something was pushing it from one side or as if it was coming loose on its own. The staircase collapsed with a sharp metallic crash that bounced off the trucks and the trees and seemed to shake the entire block. The sound was so loud and sudden that it gave him an immediate shiver, not because of the impact itself, but because of the profound silence it had just shattered. It was there, right after that, that he saw them, feet, legs dangling. They were barely sticking out of the treetops, swaying slowly, as if something or someone were coming down very slowly, unhurriedly, taking their time. My dad says that at that moment he thought of his godmother. A very religious lady, the kind who, although she didn't know how to name certain things, firmly warned that at dawn on the streets you might run into something that wasn't people. She said that they weren't there to kill you or take you away, that their only purpose was to instill fear in you, that they feed off of fear, that mix of confusion, desperation, and surprise that only exists when someone sees them. And then, when the figure finished descending and touched the ground, my dad felt his soul sink to the ground. The body was that of a man, yes, regular clothes, regular shoes, but the face was that of his godmother. It wasn't as if someone had put it on, it wasn't as if she were wearing a mask, it was her face fixed on that foreign body with that same look somewhere between sad and severe that he remembered from when he was a child, but now twisted without emotion. Do you agree with me that my dad took too long to leave the scene? Just like in movies where someone yells for the character to run and they don't. But you know something? My dad says that in moments like that you can't move, that you become a prisoner in your own head, that fear squeezes you from the inside and doesn't let you act, that you feel that if you start running as if you were prey, whatever is there will come down on you with even more force. When he finally was able to move, he ran. He ran without looking back, without stopping, without thinking about anything. He just ran, and when he finally got to the OXXO, he found it closed. I live in Xochimilco. I used to work at a call center downtown, in one of those old buildings that rumbles all the time. I hung in there for a while until a former coworker who had been gone for about 2 months contacted me to offer me another job. Walking dogs in the Naples neighborhood. She told me it was a great opportunity. They pay you better, you don't have to breathe air conditioning, and you're not locked up for 8 hours. She was right, it's a noble job. Dogs are wonderful animals. If you take the time to observe them, to walk with them, and not see them as a burden, you realize that each one has its own personality. Some are nervous, others are leaders. Some walk as if they know exactly where they're going. And there are others who seem to be constantly watching something that you can't see. We always go together. On average, she has 8 and I have 10. We use double leashes and harnesses and we already know how to position them. The little ones in front, the tough ones in the center, the ones that fight on each side so they don't cross paths. We have many schedules. We start at 7 in the morning. From 7 to 11 we walk around. Then from 11 to 5 we have another job bagging stickers in a workshop that is in a converted warehouse in Escandón. At 5 we return for the dogs and continue until the last one is delivered. Sometimes that happens at 1 in the morning. Yes, there are people who want you to return the dog at midnight. Well, let me tell you that in these neighborhoods at 10 at night you don't see anyone on the street anymore. It's strange, even though there is light, even though there is movement in the buildings, there is no one walking outside. Only other dog walkers like us and the occasional employee who is coming from the afternoon shift or who is going to the night shift. Last September, on a rainy Sunday night, around 10:30 a.m., we were halfway through our last walk. We were walking along a two-way street with a wide median strip of tall trees and grass that the neighbors take great care of. At all hours, that street is quiet, but at night, imagine it all alone. That time, with the trees dripping from the rain, everything was peaceful. Elena had fallen behind about 20 steps. Her dogs didn't want to move forward. There were three of them, but they were big ones, a Great Dane, a Belgian Shepherd, and a Doberman. And all three were straining at the same time. They didn't want to move. They just stood there staring straight ahead, and if she tried to pull them, they resisted even more. I had four or three medium-sized dogs and one small one. If you're wondering why she took the big ones, the answer is because Elena is very strong and much more skilled with dogs. She has a way of talking to them that makes even the most stubborn ones obey. That's why I started to worry when I saw her like that. She couldn't persuade them. When I realized, I stopped with the intention of going back to help her. But that's when my dogs started acting weird too. They thought about it and started pulling each other, but in the opposite direction, as if they wanted to go not towards her, but straight towards the next street. This time it wasn't like when they see a cat or something that excites them, it was something else, as if everyone had suddenly become nervous about the same thing. There was something in the space between Elena and me, something that was right there in the middle and everyone was sensing it before we did. I think Elena saw it long before I did. On the median, right between the wet trees, there was a woman. She was standing alone with a lit candle in her hand. She was an adult woman, not old, but with many years on her shoulders. The strange thing was how she was dressed. Honestly, she looked like she had come out of an antique shop. As if a statue forgotten in the storeroom of an antique shop, one of those full of dust and broken furniture, had suddenly gotten up on its own and decided to go for a walk through the streets of the neighborhood. She was wearing a long, old dress with little buttons that reached her neck, her hair was gray, and in her hands, which were very thin and pale, she held a lighted candle. The flame remained steady as if it were not affected by the rain or the wind. That candle illuminated her face in a way that made her even more terrifying. She did not seem alive. She opened her mouth as if she were going to scream and her throat widened. But no sound came out, it was just a gesture. The dogs reacted instantly. Mine tensed up, their backs bristling and their paws firm, ready to attack. One of them growled so loudly that my ears hurt. The smallest one crouched as if he were going to lunge, but he did not. Alina's were even more agitated. All three of them pulled suddenly in the opposite direction as if they wanted to flee. They pulled her so hard that they made her stumble. She went sideways, fell on her knees to the pavement, and tried not to let go of the leashes. To my right I heard the scream, then to my left the same sound just as far away. Then on the street behind, as if something or someone was running around the block and the dogs in all the houses started howling. It was the weeping woman. I started running, not out of bravery, but because my dogs were already pulling me and I listened to them. I ran with them without looking back. Alina did the same. She got up as best she could and let her dogs carry her. We met on the other street, exactly on the other side of the block, breathless, soaking wet. The dogs were still bristling. We promised each other that we would never walk down that street again. It didn't matter if we had to go all the way around, waste 10 minutes or walk down longer avenues. That street was marked as if something had been left there waiting for us. But you know how it is. Time passes, routine takes over, one gets overconfident. After 3 months, we forgot about it. We were in a hurry, we were running late with a delivery, and when we realized it, we were already on that street. Nothing happened to us, everything was normal, no nervous dogs, no noises, nothing. But just when we passed the exact point where he had appeared to us that time, we stopped. No, we weren't going to pass through here anymore, Alina said, half laughing. I was staring at a tree, a large one on the median. It had a cross carved into it, but upside down, carved with a knife directly into the bark. I don't know if it has anything to do with it. Maybe it was already there before. Maybe someone made it later. Who knows? But what do you think? The next time we passed by there, because we did pass right in front of that tree again. That's exactly where we saw it again. I was with my dogs, Alina with hers. We were chatting quietly as always, taking care not to get their leashes tangled. Suddenly, one of my dogs stood still, stiff, looking up. At first I thought he had seen a squirrel on the wires or a cat on a branch, but no. In seconds, as if they had come to an agreement among themselves, all the dogs stopped. They weren't barking or growling, they just stood there in silence with their senses alert and their eyes wide open. Fixed on the same thing. The tops of the trees on the median strip. I looked up too. There was a light. It was barely a flicker among the branches, as if someone had turned on a very dim yellow flashlight, high up. It wasn't a spotlight, it was a light that trembled, flickered softly, as if it were a flame. Alina looked at me, didn't say anything, but I already knew she was feeling it too. That strange, heavy air, as if time had slowed down a little there. and the dogs were starting to change again. The flame began to descend. It descended slowly with an eerie cadence. It wasn't that someone was carrying it or that it was attached to anything. It was just the pure flame floating without a candle, without a hand to hold it. The dogs didn't move, and neither did we. We only saw how that thing descended between the branches, trembling gently, as if the wind was watching over it so it wouldn't go out. Then, when it reached a certain height, it landed on something we hadn't seen, the candle of the woman. She emerged from the darkness as if she had always been there, without walking or emerging from a hiding place. She simply appeared. She was wearing the same old clothes, the same face that seemed carved in old wax. The flame remained fixed, perfect, on the candle that she now held in her hands. At that moment, distant, painful screams were heard, as if bouncing off the empty streets. A long, broken lament of the kind that does not seem human. A scream so sad that it hurts and so dry that you cannot understand where it comes from. And if you are wondering why, if we had her right in front of us, we were hearing her screaming from afar, the only thing you should know about the weeping woman is this. If you hear her close, it is because she is far away, but if you hear her from afar, it is because she is right in front of you, like us that night. After that, we did not run, we could not. I do not know how much time passed. It could have been a couple of seconds, a minute at most. All I know is that the dogs were the first to move. One barked, another howled, and then everything he let go. We ran without looking back. We circled the block again. Our leashes got tangled in our hands. We almost fell. We didn't say a single word. We reached a busy street and stood there on the corner as if we were waiting for something, but not knowing what. That night, the dogs wouldn't go into some buildings. There was one that we were told didn't stop shaking until dawn. Sometimes when we pass other streets, even far away from there, the dogs stop and stare up at the trees. When we see a light in the trees, even a tiny, distant light, we don't even wonder if it's a candle. We already know it is.